Welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show with your host, Ted and Austin Brower, bringing you the latest world news and health research. This is Austin Brower, and I'm so glad to have you with us today. And we do have Dad on the show with us. He's actually linking up right now. So it was we should have pretty good stuff for you guys today. He got back in town. Everything was good to go. So, yeah, we're back on with you. First article I wanted to start on today, this actually was from last year. I had a customer send me this via email, and it was just, it highlights the fact of what Monsanto recommends their pre-harvest spraying guide for glyphosate and recommends farmers that they spray their crops 3 days prior to harvest, and that's not for GMO crops. Now, we've talked about this repeatedly, but I want to give you an exact breakdown so you guys understand the reason why we're seeing all this food now that's being tested, like the Quaker Oats, you know, almost 1,400 parts per billion of glyphosate in a product that's not even GMO. Monsanto recommends 3 days before harvest, the following foods are sprayed down with glyphosate to basically increase the ease of harvesting them. The first one is wheat, which you already knew about. That's where I've seen so much with gluten intolerance, in my opinion. A lot of people have never had issues with gluten before. For the last 15, 20 years, this has gone through the roof. The next one is oats. Obviously, we see that going on. Another one is non-GMO canola, which means they're still spraying the canola, even non-GMO canola, 3 days before harvest. Flax seeds, which this is very important because that's why we carry organic flaxseed oil in liquid and capsules. If you're going to take flax seeds, if you're going to take flaxseed oil, make sure you're getting it non-GMO, organic, because you cannot have this stuff sprayed down with glyphosate. Another one was peas, and the next one was lentils, which I did not know that one. I didn't know they sprayed down lentils. Also, dry beans, which essentially almost all dry beans now, if they're not organic, they are being sprayed down with glyphosate before they're harvested. Also, non-GMO soybeans. So even GMO and non-GMO soybeans, this is why we've seen pretty much that it's almost impossible, unless you're getting certified organic soybeans, to get ones that aren't contaminated with glyphosate. That's why. And the last one is sugarcane, which that's interesting because I brought up the article a couple days ago about Hershey's and how they're switching over from GMO beet sugar to cane sugar. But now you find out here that Monsanto recommends using glyphosate 3 days before harvest on their sugar cane. So this is just a basic layout that I wanted to kind of give you guys an idea to understand that it doesn't matter, because if you think about it, what doesn't contain wheat, oat, soy, or sugar at some point or another? That's why we're seeing so much problems, so many issues with the issues with the stomach, celiac disease, the intestinal health, all the stuff's being compromised because almost everybody is being exposed to some level of glyphosate in one shape, form, way, or another. So I just wanted to address that today and kind of let you guys know that this is not just GMO foods that are sprayed down with it. This is their exact list of what they recommend for crops 3 days before harvest.
Well, the reason they're doing this, Austin, it increases yield. It's right. A desiccant. It helps to dry the crop out. It makes the seeds kind of blossom out, makes them easier to get to. And what ends up happening is they just poison the crop. I mean, think about this. You're spraying a known chemical that's been linked to a dozen types of different cancers on your food days before harvesting, and it's being promoted by Monsanto as safe. Farmers and farmer unions are promoting it as safe because it may give them an extra 2 or 3 bushels per acre, and it costs them a few cents per acre to do it. So what ends up happening is they get a higher yield if they're doing a 1,000-acre spread. That's the reason they're doing it. You know, they're trying to make as much money per acre as they possibly can on crop yield of soybeans, oats, everything. So what ends up happening is they're poisoning the population. But let me give you some updates about as far as what's happened in Europe, because I think I was on with you guys when was the last time I was on? Friday night last week?
Monday. I think you hit Monday with us. That was it.
Monday was Monday. I would have been leaving Stuttgart, I think, right? Yeah. So I was in Stuttgart on Monday, and we had a. I already told you guys about the giant pro-gay, pro immigrant parade that was being done in Dresden. We covered all that, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so that was crazy. I've got photographs of all that. And on top of that, when we were in Stuttgart, the weather over in Germany is so messed up now. Here it is, the end of middle of May. And the other day we were driving, it wasn't up in the mountains, and it was like 36, 38 degrees, and I could feel ice trying to form under my windshield wipers where they were on in the rain with sleet in the end of May. And they told me, they said, they've never seen weather like this. It's totally irregular. They don't understand why it's happening, and they simply don't know what to do about it. They said the crops that are in the ground right now that have already been planted for spring planting, that a lot of them are being washed out because of the rain, and also that they're not getting the kind of yields they need to because it's so cold. I mean, it's like they're not sprouting. So it's a real mess over in Europe. And a few years ago when we had the Gulf oil spill, I remember John Moore wrote an excellent article, and he had done some scientific research to back it up, that the Gulf Stream had either completely stopped or slowed down. This is the thermoconveyor current, which takes the warm air out of the Gulf of Mexico and recirculates it back up around England and basically warms that entire area, because that area is way, way, way north. It's in the middle of Canada. It's that far north. It's way, if you look on a globe how far north it is, I mean, right north of Sweden, you got the Arctic Circle there. So this stuff is way up there. And so what's interesting about that is, their crop yields are way, way down. Their food being manufactured is way, way down. So that was crazy. On the way to Stuttgart, we got to see that. And then we flew to Madrid, Spain, because our airline connections did that. We were flying free on points for the trip, and so we couldn't get the right kind of connections through America unless we left like at 4 o'clock in the morning. I said, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to fly for that kind of length of time. So we had them route us through Spain, and so they did that at no extra cost, and I've never been to Madrid. Now, here's what I learned about Madrid. And I didn't expect this. And if you're from South America, you'll know what I'm telling you is correct. When you go to Mexico City or a lot of the other larger areas in Mexico, it's nothing but slums. It's just slums, and trash on the road. You remember years ago, Austin, we were on that cruise and we stopped there with you, and we took a horseback ride out into the country. And yep. they had armed guards with us that were carrying like assault pistols, you know, machine gun pistols shoved inside of their jackets in case somebody tried to kidnap us. In addition to that, as we left the place where the stable was, the horses had to walk across several streets that were covered in trash. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. And the horses were kicking the trash out of the way. And because they couldn't see the cobblestone streets because there's so much trash on it. So that's the vision that I had for Spain, because it's Hispanic. You know, when I have been to Mexico, so I've never been to Spain like that in downtown Madrid, because it's another big city. I thought it'd be a big, nasty, ugly city. I could not have been further wrong. I mean, I could have not messed it anymore. Spain was one of the cleanest large cities, Madrid, that I've ever seen in my entire life. It was as clean as most of the cities in Germany. It was that clean. France, everything's filthy. Italy, everything's, I mean, filthy, filthy. I mean, filthy to the point that's just nastiness, okay? You get off the street, you know, and all you want to do is scrub down and lie soap. It's so bad. Spain was not like that. It was super clean. We got to stay in the Westin Hotel there, which was real nice. Again, we got to do all that on points, which is always a blast. And so we basically got to walk around, look at a bunch of museums. One of the museums was opened. It was free to get in for that day for some reason. So we got to look at a bunch of cathedrals and churches, the Royal Palace and all that. And it was really, really good. Now, here's the problem that I had with Madrid, though. The people there have been under this austere program imposed upon them by the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank because of the euro, because they keep exceeding their deficits. And the people have had it's very difficult there now to get a car loan or a house loan. The money's real, real tight in Spain. And the people are very, very angry there, especially towards Americans. I mean, they are just, be frank with you guys, they're just pissed off at Americans. And so if they find out you're an American, they don't even want to talk to you on the street. Most of them, the cab drivers are just rude. I mean, well, pretty much all cab drivers are rude anyhow. But they're primarily Spanish cab drivers. We didn't get any people from Mongolia or Pakistan or Ikistan or Wikistan or Blakistan or whatever. Didn't get any of those. They were all from Spain. But they were just to the point of being so rude, Austin, you would ask them a question. They would basically ignore you in the car. And you'd say, like, what is this over here? And you'd point at something. They would just look at you, ignore you. You have to tap them on the shoulder and ask a question again, and then they act like you were annoying them. So they're so unhappy in Spain because they're basically broke. The country's a failed state, but they're very, very clean. There's still a tremendous amount of pride because at one time it was Spain, France, and England ruled the world. You know that. I mean, they were always rotating, and the Spanish Armada and all the things that happened in 1492 with Columbus, and they're still probably hacked off about selling a bunch of the territories or losing it to England as for the United States. I don't know. But they had a real attitude issue over there, so I probably won't go back to Spain again. It was my second visit there. The first time was with you, Austin, when we went to Alhambra, which is the Muslim stronghold in which Queen Elizabeth actually received the keys from that in 1492 from the Moors, the Muslims, as they were being driven out of Europe. And so it's they're now, of course, they're 500 years later, they're all back in and they're getting the keys to Europe. And so it's kind of crazy, but it was so that was interesting coming back. And of course, then I got to New York, and in the New Yorkers were quite frankly refreshing. They were a lot friendlier, if you can believe that, than the Spanish. And so we had a fun time at the airport coming through customs and all that. And the good thing about it is, because I guess we just had we're just walking into the blessings of Abraham, we were able to actually walk through TSA, and I didn't have to go through any body scanners. I didn't have to refuse any body scanners for the entire trip. And yes, they are using the full body scanners again, the full x-ray scanners again. They're back at almost all of the major airports. And so good luck as far as when you're flying. Just pray before you go. And I always tell you, I'm going to tell you again, don't allow them to x-ray you. Just say no. Just say, no, I can't do that. I fly too much. I'm going to be exposed to this. I can't do it. But luckily, I didn't have to do that again. And we actually got through. We all got chosen for TSA pre-check. So none of us had to even take our shoes off coming home. So it was very, very nice. And even with the abrasive attitude of the New Yorkers, I found the entire plane load of people we flew back to Orlando with from New York absolutely wonderful compared to the Madrid folks. So it's kind of like we were just happy to be home. But the attitude of the Germans, the Europeans, not so much the Germans, but the Italians, and a lot of the French in the failed states over there, they're extremely angry at the Americans, and along with a lot of the Muslim folks, they're extremely angry at the Americans for the bombing of the Middle East, which we've done. And so we've created all of these refugees. We created these refugees. I mean, we did it, and we basically bombed them into oblivion, killed a bunch of them, and we wonder why they're all angry at us. So it was an interesting experience. I'm glad I got to report live from Europe. That was your boots on the ground again. Not planning on going back for a long time. The jet lag's a little bit brutal going over there and coming back. But yes, we are back and we are having fun. I will be on Doug and Joe Hagman's show tomorrow night for the whole 3 hours from 7 to 10 Eastern Standard Time with a whole bunch of other news and a lot of other updates that we have from Europe that I've covered a lot of those already on this show. And we're also going to be on with Dave Hodges for the first hour on Sunday night. So got a lot of great information coming your way today. I have a lot of stories to cover today. The first story I want to cover with you guys today, Austin, and this is interesting. Let me pull it up real quick. I had seen it here on the list. I'm trying not to give you dead airspace. Okay, here it is. Snowden on the destroyed torture report. You know, the CIA destroyed like an 8,000-page torture, 6,700-page torture report, which included thousands of secret documents. Here's what Snowden said. This is from Michael Thalian. He goes, as reported Monday, an intelligence source speaking with Yahoo News revealed that the CIA Inspector General's office deleted both an uploaded computer file with the report as well as a disk. So they must have destroyed the disk that contained the document. Snowden, who worked as a cybersecurity expert for the CIA prior to his time as an NSA contractor, insinuated that the document's destruction was anything but accidental. The 6,700-page report included thousands of secret documents, including the original CIA cables and memos of the agency's use of waterboarding, sleep deprivation, and other aggressive interrogation methods at a black site in prisons across the globe. Guys, I don't know about you, but I'm ashamed of our government for doing this. I'm ashamed. They would put these people in these extremely painful positions. It's like hanging them upside down or hook them by the shoulder blades or whatever they would do to them, excruciating pain, and they would keep them up for like over 100 hours, 4 to 5 days, Austin, in these positions to torture them. I mean, what's the difference between what they did in the medieval torture centers and this? People died during these torture things they were doing. And the guys who were doing the torture stuff, a lot of them are like psychotic, messed up, PTSD now, can't relate to people. They're scared for their lives because they're afraid one of these guys are going to try to come back and find them and kill them, which I don't blame the guys if they do that too, if they want to come back and kill them. I mean, it's horrible what we, the United States government, now that it's been hijacked by these criminal bank cartels and these globalists and these giant corporations, have been willing to do for the sake of national security when we found that basically we torture these people for weeks on end, months on end, years on end, and we find no relevant information. And statistically, it's been shown that any information they have, once they get captured, all that information is changed immediately by the people involved in what was going on because they know they're going to talk. So there's no reason to torture these people like this. I mean, guys, think about this. If this happened to you or one of your children or one of your family members, and they waterboarded you, they took you to Guantanamo Bay, and they hung you in upside-down positions or by your shoulder blades and hooked you backwards and made you stay up for 4 or 5 days. I mean, what the H-E double sticks is wrong with our government that we think this is okay? All of this stuff is banned by the Geneva Convention. It should never, ever been allowed to take place. And the CIA knew this, Austin, and they knew that they were involved in this, and they knew there were criminal charges that could be pending because of this, because of what they've done. So they destroyed the documentation. So now whether or not that was duplicated somewhere else, where we have additional copies of it, who in the world knows? I mean, what is it? It was tens of millions of dollars to do this report, over almost 7,000 pages, and they just decided to delete it from their servers and to get rid of the file disk. I mean, unbelievable. I don't really know what to say about this, but again, it's cover your own butts is what this is. It's a big CYA attitude on this, is that we don't want to be involved in this, and there's no way on God's green earth that somebody went and deleted a file with a 7,000-page report, Austin. Not possible. Not unintentionally. It was done intentionally. What do you think?
No, it would take too much memory space up on a computer. I mean, 7,000 pages is a lot. That's not just going to get accidentally deleted. Not to mention, reports like that are usually multi-back, so you're going to have multiple versions of them and multiple copies of them that are stored. The worst part about all this is, too, I mean, they've figured out years and years ago from a lot of these weird research studies they did with torture and everything else that it's not effective in getting accurate information out of detainees or prisoners, because at a certain point, anybody will admit to anything after a certain amount of pain or torture has been applied to them. That's just how it goes. It doesn't matter if you did it or not. You will eventually admit to it just for them to stop doing whatever they're doing to you. So to me, it's really sad that they've engaged in this behavior repeatedly over and over and over and over and over again. Because, I mean, I can't really think of any legitimate purpose to be doing this significant and severe of torture routines to people. I mean, there could be a specific reason, but I mean, I don't, like I said, nothing that even can come to the top of my head. I'd have to see some type of factual evidence before that would ever be allowed. But obviously they knew they were doing something wrong because this stuff got deleted. You don't usually delete 7,000 page documents if there was legitimate information that was completely called for on it.
Well, here's the problem that I have. Let's say, for instance, if this happened to me, okay, because they thought I knew something I didn't know. First thing I would do is tell them, look, there's absolutely no reason to torture me because I'm going to tell you everything I know without torture. I'm not going to man up here, okay, because I don't know anything. And I would answer every single question they had, honestly and truthfully. Here's the problem. They torture you anyhow, even if you do that.
Yep.
You know that. So yep. Here you say, I'm going to go ahead and tell you everything you want to know. No need to torture me. I'm good. Well, then they get all that information from you. Then they say, well, just in case you didn't tell us the truth, we're going to torture you now. You're like, what the heck? It's like being under it. It's like having a pre-deposition hearing with an attorney, and they say to you, well, we're going to ask you all of these questions, and there may not be a need to do a deposition, blah, blah, blah. So then you answer all these questions. You spend hours on end answering these stupid questions, and then all of a sudden they say, well, we're going to do a deposition. I'll put you under oath. And you're like, what for? Well, just in case you didn't tell us the truth. Well, you just told them the truth if you're a reasonable, moral person, but now they got to have you do it under oath just in case. Because that way they can get you charged with perjury. Unbelievable, Austin. And that's why Hillary Clinton, her biggest thing is, I don't remember. I don't remember because the truth is, that's basically plausible deniability, because if she doesn't remember, there is no crime saying I don't remember. I've got a crappy memory. I'm not taking enough B vitamins, and so my brain's not working right. I can't remember anything. So how do you like that? And that's how these guys get away with it. They're always like, I don't remember. I don't remember. I don't remember. Or I plead the fifth. I plead the fifth. I plead the fifth. Either way, it's because that's what they do. And suddenly you may have your memory come back and say, well, suddenly I remember. but no, they're not losing 7,000 pages of documents on torture reports. What's your next story, Ozzy?
This one's pretty interesting. Texas now is actually beginning full-blown construction of the gold depository in Texas. Remember last year, the state government planned to institute a state gold depository that allow individuals to store their gold there along with Texas gold in a presumably safe place outside the United States banking system. The Texas legislature passed the bill last June, and so far right now they're actually in the process of bidding in on contracts and getting the construction started. State Representative Giovanni Capriglione said, "I am very optimistic that the depository will be up and running at the end of this year or by the beginning of next year." He said the most important factor is making sure that the process is completed with considerable thought and care. At the depository, Texans will be able to open accounts similar to checkings or savings accounts like traditional banks and monitor them online. The whole idea and concept of this is awesome, especially for Texas, because Texas is just awesome. I mean, they really need to be their own country. The problem is I have a very, very strong feeling that if they do this, the United States is going to invade them. As weird as that sounds, they're not going to allow this to happen. There's no way that the Federal Reserve is going to allow a state like Texas that actually has a legitimate reason, legitimate size, and legitimate manpower to secede from the Union to build its own gold depository that is not available or open to the United States government. And I hope they can do it. I hope they can push it. But I have a feeling that it's not going to go the way they expect it to go, to be honest with you.
I don't think so either, Austin, because the bankers have too much authority. Well, the bankers own the country because of the Exchange Stability Fund of 1934. They own the country. The United States went into receivership in 1933. I mean, they've owned the country now since the mid-30s, and so that's what all of our birth certificates are all about now. That we're kind of collateral against the debt, which is kind of weird. I think we've all been turned into indentured servants. Here's another interesting article, because we had some terrible, terrible lines yesterday when we came into New York through TSA, and I couldn't believe it. And because we had a close flight with an hour and a half to get through customs and move the bags and everything else, they gave us some kind of orange envelopes, and we had to show these orange envelopes, which let us bypass these insanely long TSA lines that in some cases were 500 and 600 people deep. And so luckily otherwise we wouldn't have got on the plane. We never made our connecting flight, because by the time we got everything done with the bags in New York, we literally walked onto the next plane, and you know, as it had just started boarding to Orlando. So it was crazy how long it took to get through customs, and then they put you back through TSA again. You got to go back into the general part of the airport. You got to check in your bags again. And then you've got to go back through TSA again, but we had the little orange tablets, little things to get us through quickly. But here's an interesting article from Steve Watson. Then he goes, experts, TSA gridlock could have been a manufactured crisis. An aviation expert has suggested that the ridiculous long lines at airport security checkpoints in the last few days could have been purposely manufactured by the TSA in order to make a point and get increased government funding. Airports all over the country experience gridlocks. I saw it in New York yesterday with videos and images showing lines of consumers literally snaking and tailing back for miles. I didn't see the miles. Two of the worst affected airports were Chicago and Midway. I heard Chicago was really bad. Some travelers complained that it took 2 hours to clear the security line, blaming the fact that TSA was forcing everyone to take off their shoes and belts. Aviation expert Robert Mack told CBS Chicago that the lines were sort of the perfect storm and the TSA knew this was going to happen. Mack theorized that an increase in travelers, as we heard towards the summer, combined with fewer TSA workers — I don't know why we have less TSA workers — and the agency asking for more funding, they always want more money. When asked if the TSA could have personally, if they could start selling, that's right, they do sell everything they steal from you. When asked if the TSA could have purposely allowed the gridlock to happen, Mack said it is possible, or they could just be completely inept, which is also possible. So there's but I thought I would read that to you because I was affected by that yesterday in New York, though that was not that long, because they give us the little orange pieces of end papers, they'd be able to get through a lot more quicker. And what's your next story, Ozzy?
That's good. I'm glad you guys got through that, because yeah, I reported on it the other day about the video that guy made. I think it was in Chicago, and I mean the line was just insane. Mm-hmm. And so it's definitely out of control. Something needs to get changed, and TSA does not need one. This article by Carolyn Fairchild, this is on Amazon, and I just thought I would just read part of this to you guys for a second and kind of give you an eye-opener about Amazon. Amazon's a very interesting, you know, website is what it is. I mean, it's an e-commerce website. But what it's doing is more and more and more people people are realizing that Amazon is pretty much starting to own the entire market share when it comes to e-commerce, and they're really starting to shut down a lot of other websites. This article she titled, Amazon is Not Your Friend. I thought, oh, that's interesting. Do some, you know, reading on this and see what she has to say. It's basically a group of individuals that she interviewed in here, and they've talked repeatedly. They have multiple e-commerce sites that are invested in different websites. And she goes on, she goes, Amazon's impact on both the retail and delivery spaces is not new. But their announcement earlier this week might all but make the funding slowdown inevitable for retail startups. The e-commerce giant soon will be selling private label products, including groceries and household products, exclusively to Amazon Prime members. The move is huge because Amazon already owns half of all e-commerce sales. With all the growth in retail happening online, anything Amazon does to increase their already massive share is bad news for retail startups looking to scale. Go on to say, Amazon is not your friend, and that is really the bottom line. Jeremy Liu of Lightspeed Venture Partners warned, they have done a fantastic job of sucking the unit economics out of e-commerce from everybody. If they haven't sucked it out of you yet, just wait. He goes on here, he goes, when Walmart comes out with a new private label product, it typically goes on the bottom shelf in the store to make way for the outside brands that pay good money to have quality shelf space. Okay. He goes, when users go to Amazon and search, the e-commerce powerhouse will basically make it impossible for users to find anything but Amazon labeled products. Not only does Amazon target you based on what you purchased in the past, they also control the entire screen real estate. That is something that is very different than traditional retail. And, I mean, you got to think about it, guys. Amazon has gotten so big now, they've contracted the United States Postal Service to deliver on Sunday. I mean, that's some significant pull. And we've experienced some of this with, you know, customers, because Amazon and their Prime shipping and everything they do now is so lightning fast. And I got to give them that. The way they have strategically located all these different warehouses across the U.S. and carry all this inventory, and they basically have very little employees. They have all these robotics now. You know, everything's machine-based, that, you know, we can't compete with the shipping times. Everything done is done by hand here. You know, we hand-check your orders. We print your orders. We hand-pull your orders. We double-check your orders with somebody else. And we ship stuff out as fast as we physically can, and we appreciate you guys for supporting us. And most of you guys know, we usually have your stuff in 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 business days, depending on where you're located. And sometimes, you know, it may be a little bit longer if something's, you know, out of stock for a day, or if simply we're running behind. But we've gotten now where a lot of people call up literally after a day of not hitting their product. You know, they'll order on Monday, and they'll call us up on Tuesday and say, where's my stuff at? And when we tell them your stuff went out today, you know, it's, you'll have it in 2 days. It's priority mail. We're shipping as fast as we can. And we've had people get irate with us. I mean, I'm talking irate over the phone because they haven't had their stuff the next day that they ordered it or the second day after they ordered it. And, you know, we just got to say, you know, please be patient with us. Everybody is being affected by this Amazon marketplace now because nobody is willing to be patient for anything anymore. We already know that with the Internet, the iPhones, all that. And so Amazon is capitalizing on that and taking it a step further and making sure that nobody else can even compete. We can't make priority mail deliver on Sundays. They won't touch stuff from us on Sundays. The only person they will deliver for on Sundays is Amazon. So just, I wanted to bring that up to you guys as far as what they're doing, and now they're going to have private label products and groceries and everything else. So, you know, again, we appreciate your patience with us. We appreciate your support with us at Health Masters. Because we're not Amazon. We're a small family-owned company. We don't have robotics here. We don't have machines pulling products. You call us up, we're on the phone. You email us up, we email you back. Nothing's automated. So, again, we just appreciate your support. And I just wanted to say that and give you guys a little bit of a, you know, heads up on what Amazon's doing and just tell you guys, you know, we do appreciate everything and your patience. So thank you.
And here's what we also do at Health Masters. We answer the telephone. Why don't you try to call Amazon up and talk to somebody? We answer the telephone within a few minutes most of the time, sometimes immediately. What else we do is I use the products that we sell. My family uses the products that we sell. The Health Master's employees use the products that we sell. If we don't have an employee who wants to use the products and we interview them for the job, we simply make a decision to get to hire somebody else, because there's no reason not to do that. If you don't believe in what we're doing here, there's no point in working for us. We're family owned. I mean, we're a corporation, but we've been in the same family now for 35 years. I mean, yes. Who does that? I mean, who does that anymore? And when you support us, you're supporting people who believe in God, who believe in your Second Amendment gun rights, who believe in a marriage should only be between a man and a woman, who basically believe all the things that you believe, that you were taught in Sunday school if you went to a good church, and that's what we believe. And we believe in Jesus Christ. We believe in that he was born again, or that he was, you have to forgive me, my brain's not functioning yet on jet lag. We believe that you should be born again. We believe in Jesus Christ, that he was crucified, that he was buried, that he rose again on the third day. We believe in the virgin birth. We believe in the immaculate conception, to the point of how I've explained it on many shows. I mean, we believe in all this stuff, same thing as you guys do, and we support you, and we support our families and our friends. So guys, I want to thank you for supporting us. And quite frankly, if you tell us you've got to have something next day air, we'll give you a really good next day air price on it. You will be stuck in front of the line on a next day air shipment. It'll, in 90% of the time, it'll go out the same day, because we make that a priority. But we can't do it for free. But Amazon doesn't give you next day air for free either. It's sent priority mail, so it's 2 or 3 days. Now, we can do that with the priority mail, and we do it as quickly as we possibly can. But guys, think about this. We're not bringing in giant shipments of supplements out of China that we're going to try to poison you with. Okay? That's not what we do. Okay? We have to have all of this stuff contracted and made by an FDA-registered drug laboratory. We use the finest, highest nutraceutical supplements in the world, and this is what me and my family take. So you're kind of like part of the Health Masters family when you're with us. So we thank you for the patience that you've shown us, and we thank you for your support. And we really do appreciate you. And they're not going to tell you that at Amazon either. But they may have a drone that dropped something in your driveway. The other day, I got a ship and they left out in the rain. I thought that was real special. You know, before we went out of town, it was monsooning and it was left under the rain on the overhead. And it got soaking wet. And I thought to myself, well, it's not something Health Masters are going to do. So guys, thank you. We thank you for getting your vitamins from us. We thank you for supporting us. And we thank you, especially with the economy the way it is now, that you've stayed with us all of these years. Here's another article for Breitbart. I hope my mouth works better tomorrow night for Hagman. The seeds of revolt. American families owe trillions of dollars in debt they simply cannot pay, period. Slate took a look at how this is. Who's Slate? I have no idea who Slate is, but Breitbart. Slate took a look at household debt recently and found that it remains higher than it was for almost all of the post-war history. Despite a significant improvement since the end of the last recession, the problem with this debt load is the extreme difficulty of paying it off, even for people with stable jobs. The average mortgage will be well over $1,000, with taxes and other fees included. The car payments on an average $27,000 loan will be about $300 for most, depending on the item, on the terms. It's harder to estimate average student loan payments, but Brookings said in a 2014 study that 75% of households make payments of less than $300 each month, and 50% of households make payments of less than $160. Call it $150 and add $500 a month for minimal credit cards. You've got almost $2,000 a month going out the door for loan payments. That would leave most of the credit card balances untouched, while the mortgage and student loan balance would take decades to pay off. This is where we are, and this is what's happened to the United States. So here's what I recommend that you do. If you get a car paid off and you've had it for 4 or 5 years and it's still running good and you're making $300 or $400 a month payments to pay the car off, keep the car. If it's still running good, if it's not breaking down, costing you too much to drive. If it's running good, if you got a Honda, you got a Toyota, you got another product that doesn't break down, just keep it. When Harrison turned 16 years old, he got a 2002 4Runner with 160,000 miles on it. That's what he got. It's my 17-year-old son. And, you know, and Austin had driven the same car because it was paid for. And we were able to drive it for years and years and years and sell it for about what we paid for it. I mean, and so that was great. So, I mean, you don't have to buy things you don't need with money you don't have. Now, once you buy to get the car paid off and the payments are done, then what I suggest you do is you take the rest of those credit, that the money you're paying for that, and you start applying it towards the principal on the credit cards, and make sure that if you charge something that month that you pay it off at the end of the month. That's really important, and work on whittling the credit cards down. Now, I don't recommend, if you've got 10 credit cards, I don't recommend spreading the money out on the 10 cards. I don't recommend that. I recommend taking that extra money you have every month and putting on one card. Make your minimum payments or whatever you've been doing on the other ones and get that one card paid off. And then get the next cover paid off. And you can, and as you do this, you'll have like a snowball effect towards the amount of money you have towards the credit cards. The key here is you have to discipline yourself not to buy anything else on credit. It's just really important to do it that way. Then at the end, you'll end up with no car payment, no credit card payments, and a house payment. And then what you do on that is most of the time just giving, now you take all the extra credit card payments you're making, all the extra car payments you're making, and you can start stacking it on the house. And you'll be amazed if you just give them $300 or $400 extra dollars a month. What happens at the end of 15 years is you won't have a mortgage anymore. It'll be paid for. So now you have no credit card payments, no car payments, and no house payment. Guys, you know, that's the way it's supposed to be. That's the way it used to be for decades in the United States. And see, that's how we have to live. That's why so many families used to live under the same roof, different generations under the same roof. Because everybody was trying to avoid the car payments. So if you can get your house paid for, your car's paid for, now all you have to do is pay the basics. That's why so many people that are retirees who have their homes paid for and their cars paid for, even on Social Security or on small pensions, they can live a relatively good life. So that's the goal. But the first thing you got to do is try to get the automobiles paid off, okay? Then you got to get the credit cards paid off. Now, the reason I saved the house payment for last is you still deduct it off your income tax. The rest of the interest you can't anymore. So, but that's the best way to do it, to get yourself out of debt. In fact, I've got a CD series. It's called Maximum Success, How to Live Disease-Free, Debt-Free, and Worry-Free. And we go through all of these different things on that CD set. It's a great program. We got a few of those left. I may put those on special tomorrow night for Hagman Austin. But yeah, that's what I want people to realize, is that you can really have a tremendous amount of discretionary income. Then the government calls it disposable income. Austin, you remember that when you were in the MBA program?
Yeah.
They call it disposable income. I don't call it disposable income. Disposable income implies that you need to dispose of it. Okay? I don't do that. I call it discretionary income, which means you can do whatever you want to do with it, including buying silver, buying gold, storing up some food, storing up some vitamins. I mean, all of this stuff. I mean, so if you just discipline yourself to do that, and guys, listen to me. And women, listen to me, please. Just because it's on sale doesn't mean you need to buy it. I'm going to repeat myself. Just because it's on sale doesn't mean you need to buy it. Yesterday we had a few euros left at the airport, and we were in Madrid. And I said, Sharon, what do you want to do with the extra, $10, $15 in euros we have, in the change? She goes, I'm not going to do anything with it. I'm just going to keep it until next time we come to Europe. I'll just put it, in a drawer, and we'll have it next time we come over here. And I said, right answer. And, of course, I looked at the 13-year-old, and I said, now, Savannah, you got $5 or $6 extra dollars left in euros. What do you want to do with it? Well, I want to buy something. I said, well, first of all, we don't have any room in the luggage, okay? And the car we had over there was very, very, very small, so we have no extra room in the luggage. And I said, so, what we need to do here is we need to make you think that your mom was right, because she is, and just save it for the next time we come back over here. And so that's what she decided to do. So it was really kind of cool, Austin, but I've seen this so many times, and I've helped so many people with this. It's really easy to really have a huge increase in your lifestyle, but you can't do it on credit card debt. You can't be getting another credit card every month to finance your lifestyle expenditures. And if your house is too big and you can't make the payments on it, or you're on a variable rate mortgage, right now the housing market is still pretty strong. It might be a good time to try to downsize that whole mess you're in, to try to get to a more reasonable mortgage payment, because the economy may not make it through the end of 2016. I don't know what's going to happen. If Trump gets elected, they may self-detonate the economy just to try to prove a point. So I don't know what's going to happen, Austin. What do you think?
Yeah, we've discussed that, and there's no doubt in my mind that, I mean, they have shown so much pushback against him that there's no question about it that they're going to try and pull something. If he really does truly win the presidential election this year, they're going to try and pull something, because that will be pretty much their last resort before he gets into office. And like we said before, he's pretty firm on his stance with a lot of different topics. And if he gets in there and starts, writing out or canceling or however they do that with executive orders, zeroing them out, and he starts doing that with some of these real big executive orders that the globalists were really influential in making sure that the president wrote in the past, they don't want that to happen. A lot of these executive orders have been in place for a reason. They were there, the people behind the scenes wanted them in place, And so if he starts going in there and cutting these things out, they know it's going to fundamentally change America for the good, and they don't want that. The globalists want just death.
Well, I'll always remember who they force. Always remember who they force him to take as vice president. Okay.
Yeah.
Because if they, this could be another Reagan Bush thing, another Kennedy Johnson thing.
True.
I mean,
yes.
Johnson was involved in the Kennedy assassination. Roger Stone wrote the book on that, along with about 18 other people. If you watch the video online, it's free. From 9/11, from JFK to 9/11, it's a rich man's trick. Incredible video. It's like a 3-4 hour presentation. It goes into detail on who really killed JFK and why he was killed. And it's the most reasonable, concise explanation I've ever heard. And Johnson was right in the middle of it. Okay. He had everything to gain and nothing to lose because he became president. So Johnson was just a complete and total filthy, filthy scumbucket. He's just a real crude, just piece of crap is what he was. And, you know, he killed our president. He instituted a coup against the United States government. We had a coup right there. That's what people have to understand something. We lost the United States when Kennedy got assassinated. The government was taken over by the CIA, the special interests, right there. And then when Reagan became president, they tried to assassinate him within 30 days, about 30 days after he became president. And of course, the head of the CIA, George Bush, was there, and he ran the Reagan White House. That's why President Reagan signed the vaccine protection bill, and that's why he signed the assault weapon machine guns to be stopped back in the bills that he did, Austin, because Reagan wasn't all there mentally, and he was being manipulated by the powers that were actually running the country, because almost immediately after Reagan got out of the White House, he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease just a couple of years later. And that's a progressive disease. It doesn't just happen overnight, okay? He was taking naps every day in the White House and wasn't really running the country. And George Bush was doing that. And George Bush, the old man, absolutely hates Cruz. Hates Trump, wanted either Cruz or Rubio in. See, Rubio, because he was the gay boy, and the bubble boy, which we broke on the story. I mean, we were talking about it before anybody except for Alex Jones. In fact, we broke that before Alex Jones talked about it. And, you know, because we had read so much research on it. And then the guy who broke the thing about Cruz's father being involved with the Kennedy assassination. We talked about this last week. He was found dead last week in a hotel there, either last week or week before, you know, shot in the back of the head. So he was assassinated. So this is what's going on. Here's another interesting article. Colorado governor signs law allowing residents to collect rainwater on their own property. This just really ticks me off, okay? Because now it sounds like, oh my God, they're going to be able to store rainwater now and save it and whatever. And then you read what it says. He's going to allow them to save and to store 255 barrels of rainwater. Are you joking me? What
wow.
the heck does that even mean? 110 gallons of water, you can store it. Why don't you just fill up 4 bathtubs? I mean, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? This is stupid. I can't even believe this. I mean, what if you've got livestock? I mean, it's ridiculous. You should be able to collect as much rainwater as you want and put it into holding tanks. Now, if you want to dam up the river and not let your neighbors downstream get water, that's different. Okay, you shouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah.
But I mean, but just if you want to store some water, are you joking me? Out in Oregon, they're doing the same garbage. They're putting people in jail for collecting rainwater in ponds on their property. I mean, unbelievable. Well, I don't understand any of this also. It makes no sense to me because it's just, again, it's the loss of rights. But Colorado, that state is no longer what you think it is. I mean, the entire CIA has moved out there and everything else. It's like the second Washington, D.C. with all those underground tunnels and everything they've got out there.
Oh, yeah.
Colorado is super, super liberal now. Oh, by the way, I was talking to this one lady yesterday on the plane. I got to bring this up before we run out of time. She was up like from New Jersey somewhere, and she was in a sales in the clothing or something. I don't know. So that my 13-year-old was talking to her, and it got my attention because she'd had a hole in her throat. You know, you usually get that from having throat cancer, and that's usually from smokers. And so, but she was about in her late 30s, early 40s. And she was talking to Savannah, and she was a little bit overweight. Well, she was a little bit overweight. She was probably 50 pounds overweight. But you could tell she'd been very attractive when she was younger and before she'd gained all the weight. She was very gregarious, very outgoing, even though she had to speak to that little hole in her throat. And so we started talking to her, and I asked her, I said, let me ask you a question. I said, who are you voting for? She was, of course, it's going to be Hillary Clinton. Okay. So then I knew immediately she was super liberal to even say that. And I said, well, have you heard of Roger Stone? She goes, yes. He wrote a book, Clinton's War on Women. She says, I've already read it. I started laughing at her. And we were stuck on the tarmac waiting for our gate to open up. And so I had about 20 minutes to talk to her. And I said, well, let me ask you a question. I said, you read the book on all the women that Bill Hillary has allegedly raped, according to Roger Stone. She goes, yeah. And all of the women that were terrorized by Hillary Clinton trying to get them to shut up because of Bill raping them, allegedly accused by Roger Stone. She goes, yeah, of course, of course. And I said, and you know what happened with Benghazi and how they let those boys die. Oh, yeah. I said, well, did you watch the movie 13 Hours with Benghazi? Well, no, I didn't see that. I said, but you read the book? She goes, yeah. I said, you're still voting for Hillary? She goes, yeah. And I said, she goes, Donald Trump scares me. She goes, I've met him before. He's just a real focused business guy, and he's not real nice. And I said, who has he raped? Well, nobody. And then she goes, well, he has real good taste in women, too. I said, okay. So he has three marriages. Kids are all well-behaved. He hasn't raped anybody. He hasn't drugged anybody. He hasn't done anything to anybody like Bill Cosby and Bill Clinton have. And so he's a billionaire. He's super successful, and he's real focused. But you're going to vote for Hillary, who's a criminal. She goes, well, yeah, of course. And I thought to myself, stupid is as stupid does. Where do these people come from? I can't understand the mindset, son. And then finally I told her, I said, well, you know she's a witch. Well, yeah, people call her all kinds of names. I said, no, I'm not calling her a name. I said, witches and warlocks, Dungeons and Dragons, demons. She's a witch. And she goes, oh, I don't care about that. And I'm like, okay, all right, you don't care, she's a witch. Okay, we're just okay, all right. And so funny. Then she gave my 13-year-old her card and told her she wanted to get any clothes, and she took her up on the car. On the clothes. So as soon as we got off the plane, I immediately took the card away from Savannah and tossed it and said, you know, we're this lady, I want no part of this lady. This lady is messed up in the head. See, this is the problem with liberals, okay? The really hardcore liberals. It doesn't matter the facts. It's almost as if they say to you, look, I'm going to vote for who I'm going to vote for, and don't confuse me with the facts. Donald Trump is worth $10 billion conservatively. Unless they've destroyed his businesses and destroyed the Trump name because of all this, maybe worth, you know, $6 billion. Who cares? But the point is, he has done nothing wrong, and he wants to help the United States. And why in the world can't we give him? I mean, the last time I remember, Clint Eastwood came out and endorsed Romney over Obama, you know, 7 years ago or 4 years ago, and said, "Look, it's time to put a businessman in the White House." That's when Clint Eastwood did his big famous thing with the chair. That didn't help anybody with anything. And Clint Eastwood basically said, you know, said we need to put a business guy in the White House to figure out how to fix this mess we're in. See, we've got to do that, guys. In Europe, so many people were pro Donald Trump. And they said, we've got to get somebody in like Donald Trump in Italy. We've got to get somebody in like Donald Trump in Germany. We've got to get somebody in like Donald Trump in France. Because they know that without that, without somebody who's going to be really strong, awesome, we're going to get the same old, same old. I told the girl, I said, we're going to get another Kennedy and Bush and a Clinton. Bush and Clinton. I said, this has been going on now since the Reagan administration, since 1980. So, you know, we've had 35 years of this mess. Are you kidding me? This is what you want again? She goes, well, yeah. She goes, at least we know it's going to be consistent. I said, consistently bad? I said, are you joking with me? We've got to fix this mess. But see, Austin, that's the biggest thing people do. You know, I remember, let me tell you a story. Before I run out of time, I want to tell you the story. There was a man who got a job. This is like a parable, so you guys stay with me for a second. You'll like this story. This is from a guy who did a really, really good on a very good thing on the reticulator activator. A man decided to start taking the bus to work in a big downtown city, and he would get dropped off at the bus, and he had to walk through a residential area to go to work. And every day there was a dog laying on the front porch crying. Just crying. And finally, you know, after like 2 weeks of walking by this dog crying, the guy couldn't take it anymore. So the dog was just woo, wailing like dogs do, right? Finally, he walked up to the guy's porch on the door, and he knocks on the door, and he goes, do you know your dog's crying? Yeah, we know he's crying. Okay, well, why is he crying? Well, he's laying on a nail. And the guy goes, well, why is he on a nail? Well, it doesn't hurt him bad enough yet to move. That's the problem we have in the United States. Everybody's laying on a nail, but they've got comfortable laying on the nail, and it didn't hurt bad enough because we've gotten used to it. Guys, this is not it. This is not the vision that the fathers of this country had for this country. This government controlled tyranny by the federal government and international corporations, this is not it. The problem is we've laid on this nail now for so long, Austin, and we've gotten used to it, and we're scared of door number one or door number two or door number three, and we don't want to go through the door. And that's the problem, because Trump's door number one, Bernie Sanders' door number two, Hillary's door number three, and nobody knows what's behind Trump's door. That's why they're scared. They don't know who's behind Trump's door, but they know who's behind Hillary's door. They know who's behind Bernie's door. So now they'd rather have one of those two communists in the White House so they know what to expect for the next 8 years. And so, guys, we got to go for door number one this time with Trump, and we just have to believe him when he tells us, based on, you know, all these 40 years, 30, almost 50 years now in business for himself, he's going to do what he says he's going to do, because he's got a pretty good reputation of doing that. What do you think, Oz?
Well, yeah, a lot of people are always scared of the unknown. They're always afraid of what they don't know. And the problem is, I can't imagine how you would possibly be more for Hillary and what she's been involved in than you would just deal with the unknown with Trump. So, I don't know. Like I said, we'll see what happens with it. Last Tuesday, I did an article on Ron Paul that he wrote with the NDAA bill and how it was basically going to be requiring women to sign up for the draft, which, if you want to listen to this show, I went into detail on Tuesday. Good news is the House of Representatives stripped that requirement yesterday from the bill, which is a sweeping annual defense policy bill. But what's crazy, supporters of the provision said they're going to keep pushing for its passage. The House Rules Committee set up removal of the amendment from the National Defense Authorization Act during a meeting. It was taken out of the bill via procedural vote on Tuesday afternoon. Listen how stupid this guy is here. The Senate's Republican majority leader, this is Republican, Mitch McConnell, said he believed women should all register, although he did not expect the country to reinstate the draft again. Well, why do they need to register for the draft if you don't expect the United States to call in the draft? I mean, what's the significance of even saying that? I don't even know why they want it in the bill. I talked about it on the show on Tuesday. I said, how does this even work? I mean, what are they going to have all these different exemptions and provisions for females that are, you know, newly mothers, that are pregnant, that are a certain age? I mean, making women register for the draft makes absolutely no sense at all, especially considering the fact of how many able-bodied males we have in the United States. If there was ever a true reason to enact the draft again, we have more than enough men to handle the scene if that problem arose, instead of making women register for the draft. But again, this is all about that liberal feminism. We want everybody to have equality. We want men to be able to use the little girls' restrooms if they feel like it. We don't want to leave women left out. We need to let them register for the draft. It's all this confusing of gender identity and intentionally trying to confuse the population into making them think these are okay principles to follow. And they're simply not. Women do not need to sign up for the draft.
No, I agree with you, Austin. It's just not necessary. Also, I've got a solution for the transgender bathroom thing. I've got a solution. I know how to fix it. Very easy to fix, very low costs. And quite frankly, I personally, this is something that I believe. I believe that all transgenders should have their own bathroom facilities. I do. I don't think they should be using the men's bathroom or the women's bathrooms because of the exposure of the men to the little girls, etc. Okay? I don't want to see any of that. I think that all transgenders should have their own bathroom facilities because, quite frankly, I don't want some weirdo in the bathroom when I'm in there either. Okay? I don't want that. Okay? Some weirdo. So here's what I suggest we do. In all of the areas where this is a problem, put portalets outside. Have them change into portalets. The temporary toilets that basically have all the sewage left in the hold that they've got to swap out every week or so, and just let all the portalets be for transgenders. And if they do that, Austin, it'll really cut the price down. It'll give them their own bathrooms. It'll say, transgender bathroom outside, please use portalet. And that will take care of it. And I'll be happy to have that done, too. What do you think, son? But don't you think
I'm all for that?
Well, no, but they don't have to build anything for them. Just put a portlet out back. I mean,
no, they're very cheap. I mean, you can have them dropped off. You only have to pay for them, you know, by the week or by the month.
And that way we don't have to be exposed to them. They don't have to be embarrassed because they're using our bathrooms. Just let them go out back and use the portlet. You can put them out there behind the dumpster and just let them be out there. And then let them do what they're going to do in the bathrooms and not invade our little bathroom space that we have and be done with it. We'll be finished with it. But I'll tell you what now, Europe is pretty weird. Because Europe's already pretty much done all of this weirdness, okay? We're in a gym the other day that has a steam room and a sauna, right? And there's a glass door from the gym, which is co-ed, to the steam room and the sauna and the showers that you have to use before you go into the saunas. And they're pretty much co-ed. And the funny thing about it is people are walking around naked in there. They didn't do it when we were there because it was holiday. There was nobody in there. And then they go into the steam room with a towel wrapped around them or whatever. And there's a glass door. You can look right into the bathroom, you know, into the shower. And I started laughing. I thought, man, this is just really weird because, you know, Europe over there, they just have a different value system because they've been so indoctrinated now by the Rothschild banking cartel for 300 years. They really don't care about any of that stuff anymore. I remember one time I walked into a steam room in a hotel in Austria in the gym, and I'm wearing a robe, right? Everybody started screaming at me because all these men and women were sitting in this steam room naked, and I'm the only one wearing the robe. And I thought to myself, I just don't really need to be in here this badly. I just turned around back off. They were yelling at me, telling me to take my robe off. And so I just said, you know what, guys? I got to go. Turned around, went back out the door and closed the door. I thought to myself, this is a really weird society that women and men are sitting in steam rooms naked. But they did have an age limit. You had to be like 17 or 18 years old to be down there, which was really good. And so that's not what we're imposing here in the United States. We want the transgenders who don't want to use the portlets to be able to sneak into the little girl's bathroom and look at our daughters. And that's just not acceptable to me, son. Not acceptable.
No, not at all. The one last thing out of Colorado now. You mentioned that out in Colorado. Now what they're doing is they're starting to do voluntary drug tests at motor vehicle stops now. Since January, the Colorado State Police have been pilot testing drug saliva kits for private corporations. They've been using five different untested drug saliva test kits on suspected stoned drivers. According to CBS Denver, state troopers have been field testing these on volunteer motorists. And the crazy part about it is drunk driving's actually decreased, and alleged drugged driving epidemic is a lie. And so people seem to understand that this is not something you need to submit to either. If you're out in Colorado and they want to do a mouth swab on you to see if you've been smoking pot, whether you've been doing it or not, that's your business. But don't be submitting to these voluntary drug tests and letting them swab your mouth. There's absolutely no reason to allow that type of invasive behavior to be done to yourself.
I agree, Austin. And guys, thank you again. I'm back in the saddle. I'll be back with you guys tomorrow. Thank you for supporting Health Masters. Sign up for our emails. Sign up for our newsletter. It's totally free. Thank you for getting your supplements from us. We love you guys. We appreciate you. Thanks for listening. Go ahead and close, Oz.
Yes, thank you for everything, guys. Give us a call or email us, healthmasters.com. You guys have a blessed night, and we'll be on the show with you guys again tomorrow, and Dad will be on Hagman from 7 to 10 Friday night as well. Thank you so much.